Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Haley Bird Wilt.
And Grace could not join us for this episode, but we're going to power through and we're going to talk about the best way to set up a new Republic government after the sequel trilogy, in which the Republic has been destroyed by the First Order. How do they rebuild? What does that system look like? How do they learn lessons from the past? This is a quintessential Hot Takes episode because it combines two of my favorite things, politics and Star Wars, and maybe we'll even incorporate some lessons from the real world along the way. So let's start with one of the central questions of any government, which is how much control should it have over the people, the planets within its jurisdiction? We saw two very different models in the Star Wars saga. The Republic of the prequel trilogy was on paper quite expansive, but many of its laws did not reach all the way out to the far-flung planets. We saw this with Tatooine. Of course, the ban on slavery was not enforced there. Then we had the Empire, which really cracked down on a lot of different things and exerted its will wherever it chose. But that, of course, was a heavy-handed approach that tipped over into authoritarianism and did not win them many friends. So I guess as we think about the sequels and this broader era after the sequel trilogy, what do you think, Haley? What's the best way to do this in terms of like a federalist system like the U.S. with a significant degree of power vested in the local authorities, or a more centralized system like we see in some other countries in the real world? And, you know, we saw a version of it with the Empire, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that.
Yeah, I feel like this. So we were talking about this before, and you mentioned there's a book about sort of the New Republic era where the Senate and the broader, you know, institutions were debating this question. And I think what we see in this sort of era after the Galactic Empire fell was something we see a lot in the real world, too, which is a recency bias, where you're really focused on preventing the last bad thing that happened to you, and you sort of lose sight of other potential things that can happen. Just reviewing sort of the Star Wars books, the movies, just sort of the places that the New Republic fell short, I guess it could be summarized as the New Republic was really, really preoccupied with avoiding dictatorship, abuses of power, oppression from their own government, that it sort of hampered its own abilities to defend itself and to recognize or respond to genuine threat posed by outside forces like the First Order. The main problem is like striking that balance. Like how do you both ensure that your government is strong enough to keep the government safe, but also not too strong? This is also like, you know, the defining debate of our own country, the United States. You had the Constitution, the whole debate about that sort of flowed from the Articles of Confederation, which were, you know, people said those were too weak and you needed a stronger government to sort of be able to handle both internal order and protecting the country. So I don't know. I have a few random like thoughts on that here, which is like, how do you prevent, if you're thinking about someone like a Palpatine figure, like how do you prevent someone like that from building up too much institutional power? And it's like, oh, do you hold elections more often? Or, you know, in some ways, the New Republic took steps that were like designed to help this. I was reading Wikipedia, of course, and there's a section about how they sort of opened up media censorship and they were having political debates on the HoloNet and sort of making the public more aware of things that maybe these conversations were being held more privately before. So maybe that kind of thing, maybe term limits for the top leaders or that kind of thing. But it turns out there was sort of a bigger debate about this between populist and centrist worlds in the New Republic era. And Eric, you know a little bit more about that than I do, but I thought we should talk about it some.
Yeah, so this comes up in a fantastic book, one of the best books of the Disney Star Wars canon, I think, called Bloodline. And this was a book by Claudia Gray, one of the best Star Wars authors, in my opinion. And it basically spotlights Leia at a point where she is getting ready to form the Resistance. It has not yet been created, but you see what drives her to that point, because the New Republic is sort of riven by this debate between these two factions. She's part of the populists, who are more worried about not becoming a new empire. They support a decentralized approach with a lot of autonomy for the individual planets. And she comes up against the centrist faction, which is, as the name suggests, much more interested in a strong central government, having a robust, active military, not leaving as much of the both politics and defense to the planets. And the book kind of shows, first of all, just what happens in her own life as, you know, secrets about her past come out. But I think even more interestingly, how the New Republic is wrestling with the question of balancing all the different goods and bads, right? I mean, they want to serve people. They don't want to be the old Republic where slavery could just flourish in the Outer Rim. But they also want to respect people and not be the empire where, okay, the empire might decide to crack down on slavery on certain planets just for optics reasons, but also it was a totalitarian regime where you couldn't speak out and criticize, and basically every decision was just made on Coruscant and executed by a local governor who had no actual autonomy. So, you know, there's good and bad versions of each of those different arrangements. I think, you know, I like your point about recency bias, and that, of course, was part of the Articles of the Confederation, is they were worried about not having a repeat of the British Empire, and I think we did see that with the New Republic, unfortunately. They were so worried about becoming the Empire that they were not worried enough about becoming the Old Republic in certain ways, and, of course, that's how the First Order was able to rise. So, yeah, I think, personally, I come down on the side of more centralized control, more muscular centralized government, and I think you're right that there are checks and balances you can put in place to try to minimize the odds of someone like Palpatine coming up again. I mean, the thing about Palpatine is, ultimately, yes, when he declared the New Order, that was not through that was an extra legal maneuver, right? He did not use legal authority to do that, but everything up to that point, including the actual power he wielded as chancellor, was through the legal process. So if you change the legal and constitutional, quote-unquote, process, you minimize the opportunity for a person to get to the point that Palpatine got to. And I don't think he could have declared the New Order, become emperor, and actually instituted the imperial system without the degree of power that he was only able to get through legal means. Now, he obviously manipulated things behind the scenes, but if you don't even have the ability to get that power legally, all the manipulation in the world is not going to help you with the law. You're going to have to resort to extra legal means. And again, I don't think Palpatine could have done that any earlier than he did in terms of the actual steps he took. So that would be my solution, is strengthen the legal regime to put in place more oversight and basically more scrutiny and skepticism, so that a person cannot just use the threat of a war to say, I get to do everything now, and the Senate is a relic. That's my view.
I think, like, that is basically, the New Republic agreed with you on that. Plus, they went farther and they were like, also, we're not going to, like, have a really good, we're not going to spend a lot on our military. They not only hampered the executive person in that role, the chancellor, which sort of held over from the previous government, but they also were like, we're also not going to give them, you know, the resources to sort of oppress people if they wanted to, which just went a little bit too far. But I do want to talk about this idea that in that book, part of the factions, the populist worlds, were sort of not only in supporting greater planetary decision-making and power about ordering their own affairs, but also some of the senators who sort of aligned with that view were basically saying that the citizens themselves should be able to vote on Senate legislation. And even some went so far as to say that there shouldn't be a Senate, that the worlds could hold referendums on various items coming up in the Senate or in the government, I guess, if the Senate's not existing at that point, to make decisions for the whole, which seems like that's not a very nimble way of making decisions, but maybe for bigger problems, I don't see... you know, I don't see that many drawbacks of at least giving people more say in some of their you know, the rules and regulations and the laws that they have to abide by. I don't know. What do you think about that, Eric, about abolishing the Senate or making more room for direct elections on some different policy questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure the galactic level legislature needs to be split from just the Senate proper to a bicameral system where at the very least you add in that other chamber of proportional representation. So it's not just that every planet, no matter how significant to the economic and defensive and cultural apparatus of the galaxy, only gets one senator and they're all equal. That is not the best way to run things. You do need a degree of representation for where the people are, right? What is the predominance of opinions within the galaxy about an issue? And if all the heavily populated planets, your Coruscants, your Corellias, are in favor of something, and the very, very sparsely populated outlying planets are against it, in the Senate, that could be, theoretically anyway, a tie vote. More than likely, it would actually be a vote in favor of the sparsely populated worlds, because there are probably more of them. In fact, almost certainly more of them than there are heavily populated worlds. You need some mechanism for the actual will of the people writ large to be represented in some kind of fair, proportional way. As far as what you do with the Senate, where it's one, you know, senator per planet or per sector, I don't necessarily know that you need to get rid of it. I mean, it's funny, you know, I'm trying to have this conversation without thinking too much about the real world, because the issues of the real world are not a one-to-one to Star Wars. To some degree, they would be similar, right? I mean, in terms of this, the raw numbers, it is creating similar problems to have one senator per planet, no matter the population. But the specifics are obviously going to look different. So I don't want to lean too heavily on what we're seeing in the real world. But there's a question about the value of a system where every planet only gets one person. I think the argument for keeping the Senate in a bicameral legislature would be it's sort of the House of Lords, at least under the old British model, which is they are the ones, you know, the original plan for the U.S. Senate, right? They're the saucer that cools the cup. And you have people there who perhaps have more experience, who perhaps are a little bit wiser in the ways of galactic politics, and they're a buffer against the vicissitudes of the masses and these wild swings in what people want to do. But that gets to some dicey territory about this kind of aristocratic model of governance where you let the elites essentially overrule the people on issues that are probably going to have the most direct impact on the people. So I guess all this is to say, I think you need to add a House of Representatives. I don't necessarily know that you need to get rid of the Galactic Senate.
That is a good point. On that note, I sort of have a total tangent. We talk about it. We have a show notes document here, and we have different questions we want to address. And you have, you know, the relationship with the Jedi, and like, how should the Jedi be integrated into the government? Like, separate from it, something in between. One of my thoughts was, like, decentralization of the Jedi Council itself, I think would be a really important thing if there ever is a time where the Jedi are as influential and as important to the government as they were in the previous Republic. You can't just have a council of 12 guys making those decisions, because at that point you have, you know, they're like, oh, should we tell people that the Force isn't really working for us anymore? Like, it was not transparent. If I were in charge of the Jedi Order, I don't know if I was almost thinking, like, if there needs to be, like, sort of separate from their traditional, like, religious kind of ways, where you literally have, like, an executive branch faction of the Jedi Council, and you have the, like, you're sort of pitting them against each other in, like, ways that could cause problems, but you're also, I don't know, holding each other accountable in ways that the original only singular the council was not able to do so. I was curious what you think should be done in that sense. If you think, you know, maybe multiple Jedi councils, if it does reach a point where there's that many Jedi and they're that important to the government, or if you think, you know, that it needs to be a totally different situation with the government and the Jedi.
Yeah, that's such an interesting idea of having multiple Jedi councils. I don't know. I guess I hadn't thought about it before. My initial thought is just that it doesn't... It could prevent secrecy in some cases and force transparency if one of the councils is basically saying, well, we're going to go tell them. You do what you want to do, but we're going to go tell them. So you could break through some secrecy there. But I guess I don't have any reason to think that it would overall produce better outcomes than one council, because any group delusion or group sort of, you know, willful ignorance or
we'll say it's regional, like if there's regional Jedi councils.
Yeah, I guess I'm not quite sure why we would think that an issue that affects one of the regional councils would not affect the other if they're tapping into the Force that is a universal presence. What issues are we thinking are going to arise that will only affect one council and can be balanced out by other councils?
Well, I guess to the extent, like you've mentioned, slavery happening in, like, outer... Like, they have more awareness of what's happening on the ground if you have, I don't know, a regional council out there and they're like, oh, we should allocate resources here. Or, like, I'm not sure if it's so much that they're facing entirely different issues as it is that they're not all, like, coalesced in one place most of the time. I don't know.
But see, that's, like, that would be a governmental issue, right? So, like... doing something about slavery would be handled by the government. And
but does it have to be handled by just the government?
Well, I mean, in a system of elected democratic leadership, you don't want this auxiliary sort of warrior monk caste to just go around
vigilante
getting rid
human
of
rights,
right. I mean, if a sovereign planet invites a Jedi in to mediate a dispute, that's one thing, right? Because the democratic government of that planet, or even if it's not a democratic government, at the very least the recognized government of that planet is inviting them in. But for the Jedi themselves to just go around and say, well, we think this is bad and we're going to get rid of it, is dicey, because we can all agree, well, hopefully we can all agree, that nobody would shed a tear about Jedi going around and getting rid of slavery. But
the slavery to begin with was supposedly against the law. Like, it's not like they're going in and overturning the laws
of that
planet.
I see, so in your view, they could be asked by the Republic to implement and
right.
ensure the enforcement of. Yeah, I guess I that's kind of what I imagine the Jedi being in this era. And I guess I should say, to this bigger question of how should they be connected to the government, I think they need more distance from the government than they had in the prequels. I think that there need to be institutional and cultural barriers to the Jedi being asked to get as involved as they were in the prequels. Now, with a strong military and well-trained officers, you don't necessarily need the Jedi. They could be kind of a special forces group. When a big problem pops up, the council will probably notice it and recognize that it's an existential threat to galactic society, and they'll say to the government, hey, we would like to go deal with this, and the government will say, okay, sure, go ahead, or that conflicts with something we were doing or whatever. But the government is not going to turn to the Jedi as its own tool. The Jedi are out there communing with the Force, generally doing good things that don't interrupt the flow of representative democracy, and sometimes their interests will converge and they work together, but they are not seen as one system. So yes, to your point, if there are more Jedi out there in the galaxy and they have outposts on various planets, they'll notice things like slavery continuing to exist, and they can then go to the Republic and say, hey, your law is not being enforced out here. Can we do something about that? And the Republic, again, if it's a well-functioning government, as we hope that it will say yes. I guess the question is, what happens if it says no? But then it would what's the point of having the law if you don't want it enforced? That gets into all kinds of other questions about just corruption in the process, which are not necessarily what we're talking about here. I just don't think that having more councils solves the problem of the Jedi making good decisions, because it just adds more people who can make bad decisions.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking of how to, like, the main problem here, like, in terms of risk mitigation, if we're learning lessons, is that, like, you can't trust Force wielders. Like, they're not static. They're not always gonna stay on your side. And you sort of mentioned, like, you work with them where your interests converge at that moment. Like, your interests might not always converge, especially in the case of, like, Anakin Skywalker. Like, you learn from that kind of thing that you should not pin the pillars of your society on people like that. Like you can't always trust them to the extent that it's not static. It's not like always an ideological thing. Like for Anakin, it was totally emotional. To a certain extent, like all people can be affected in those ways. But like when you have powers like that and abilities like that, it's not. But you don't want to overcorrect, right? Like you still want to be able to take advantage of those abilities to the benefit of society. With that, while also sort of mitigating the risks. So I don't know, the sort of distribution of Jedi decision making was my attempt at squaring that circle. But I'm not. You say you want them to be more separate from the government, but like, how would you sort of continue to ensure that there are institutional ways to draw on that resource?
Well, I mean, first of all, to what you were just saying about, you know, Anakin, I don't think there's an institutional solution to the problem of the dark side, because Palpatine, unlike with his own authority where he abused the legal process, Anakin was on the council but was not in a real position of authority that Palpatine subverted. Like, he just, once Anakin was corrupted to the dark side, he just said, go slaughter the Jedi. He didn't say, like, use your authority within the Jedi to tell them to do things that I want them to do. In other words, once you have converted Anakin, whatever the Jedi look like as an institution, whatever system they have, however many council members or however many councils, is not going to matter, right? As long as you have that person with the raw strength and the army that can take them by surprise, you can win. In other words, I don't think any of the things we're talking about with the structure of the Jedi prevent the problem of Anakin falling to the dark side in Order 66. As far as how you institutionally separate the Jedi from the Republic...
Wait, okay, counterpoint.
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
The problem of order... Like, okay. There were, like, so many warning signs. like, the Fives arc in Clone Wars. The Council and, like, the other parts of government... just did not pay attention to. I'm trying to remember who. I mean, obviously Fives was trying to tell people about it, but
I think it was Shaak Ti.
Yes, right. And it, like, there was not. I don't know if there's a way to sort of like have an Inspector General of like of the Jedi or something like that who's like actively looking for those kind of things, or like has the bandwidth for that, because like there were ways to stop that from happening. It's not like it was a foregone conclusion. They weren't paying attention. And I don't know if, you know, if you have more councils, maybe it, to the extent that I mean have more councils, I mean maybe you need like watchdog institutions like built of the same like kind of people, like Jedi force users, like who have the like the time and the resources to be keeping an eye on things like that, or like listening to whistleblowers or looking just for sort of, I don't know, shady stuff going on.
I actually love the idea of like a group of Jedi, or maybe just a handful, who are selected for their sort of big picture view and their kind of like Qui-Gon Jinn, right? Like he would be a great Inspector General of the Jedi.
Because like you need like the minority party of things. Like you need like the Count Dooku who defected for the reasons that he was disappointed in the Jedi. You need him to be able to be like, here's the reasons, here are the reforms I think you should make. Like you need to give them an option of, instead of going to go work for the separatists, like I'm going to work to reform these things. And I feel like there wasn't an avenue in the previous Republic to do that kind of thing.
Absolutely. You need a role for the iconoclasts to keep the system honest and to point out and rectify the problems. I think that's definitely true. The prequel era Jedi, not only were the leaders too dogmatic, but there was really no way for the people, the Qui-Gon Jinns and Count Dookus of the world, to have any way of really making clear the problems that they saw. They could talk to the council members, but the council members were caught up in their own views, and you know, it's always risky to say like we're going to give this handful of individuals the power to overrule the council, because then what's the point of the council? But if you could have some kind of transparent process where the Inspector General, you know, the IG, you know, Gon Jinn or whatever his name would be, could, you know, publish a report, hold a hearing, make a plea to the Senate directly. I mean, I can imagine ways for them to at least raise the issue beyond the Jedi Council. And so if it's truly a serious problem, the public will demand that the Council revisit the issue, and the Council will not be able to, as you said, keep certain things hidden. So yes, I think that's an interesting model, the IG model, where they don't necessarily overrule the sort of leadership, but they publicize their concerns, and that generates pressure to address the issue if it really is an issue. And that's a way of keeping the leadership honest without letting this sort of Inspector General person become a shadow, you know, Grand Master of the Jedi Order, the sort of overruling Yoda, you know, which you don't necessarily want, because the IG is also susceptible to their own problems. So
yeah.
I think that's an interesting way of having that balance. To go to the question you asked me before about how do you keep them separate but also keep them aligned, I think a lot of it is personality. If you're going to say the Jedi Order is a distinct institution, whoever's in charge at any given moment needs to have a good relationship with the Chancellor or the President of the Republic or whatever. And there's only so much you can do through institutions to ensure that they see eye to eye. It's really about what are the leaders of the Council doing to steer the Jedi Order in a certain direction, and is that direction similar to what the government of the Republic is doing to steer itself? Again, some of that's institutional, some of it's very personal. You could imagine all kinds of laws that say if a certain percentage of the Senate votes on a particular measure to ask for the Jedi to get involved, it gets kicked to the Council and they have to decide. It's not an order. It does not command the Jedi to do anything. You could, on the other side of things, you could have a mechanism for a certain percentage of the Council to vote to request that they be allowed to do something that would have political and governmental implications. Again, like enforcing a ban on slavery that's already passed. There are all kinds of things I could imagine, but I would like to see, you know, you set out those procedures, but the institutions are distinct, but they are allowed to communicate and request each other's assistance.
Hmm. That makes sense. So is there anything that you like noticed? You read the book. You said it's called Bloodlines?
Bloodline, yes.
Bloodline. Was there anything that the New Republic that you noticed was like doing well, or you think would be carried over from the into this new era post sequels? I took a note of one thing that seemed interesting, was that the New Republic sort of on a regular basis changed the seat of power from, you know, it wasn't a permanent planet, it was a shifting seat of government, taking turns among each of the member planets, which seems like sort of a pain, but sort of a step in the right direction in terms of keeping various planets more involved in the process, or ensuring that it doesn't sort of turn into a really one planet has a lot more power than the rest of the planets, if that makes any sense. What do you think about that? Is there anything else? So first of all, what do you think about that? Do you think that should be held over in a new post-sequel government? And secondly, was there anything like that sort of stood out to you as like, oh, that's good, or they were taking a step in the right direction, or, you know, maybe that was a little unwise at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept, and I think probably a little bit of what you're seeing there is thinking about the real world and trying to solve some of the real world problems. So in the real world, you know, you have K Street, right, which is this institution that is devoted to influencing people, and it is built up in a particular place, and a lot of the people who, well, a larger percentage of the people who live in the city we're both in right now are focused on that influence work than in any other city in the U.S. because that's where the national government is. And so what if we just move the national government? But I don't necessarily know that gets rid of the problem, especially in Star Wars, where, yes, if you're like a lobbyist on Coruscant and then the capital is moved to, you know, Hosnian Prime, it's annoying for you to have to move, but you can just move. Like, you know, you can,
right.
You know, it's not like some kind of, oh, we're getting rid of the corrupting rot of lobbying, which I think is kind of what was imagined here to some degree, is like, we're going to try to get rid of this permanent class of influencers who are corrupting the Republic, but I think they can just move just as easily as the Senate. And if the goal, so that's one thing. Another goal, as you said, might be giving multiple planets a chance to be thought of in the popular imagination as the shining center of the Republic, and exposing the galactic legislature to the cultures of more than just one planet, which could potentially influence how they make their decisions. Yeah, that's true, but I don't necessarily know that a problem with the Galactic Republic is that the lawmakers are, like, myopically only aware of one planet's culture, and it's the planet that they're on. Like, they represent their own planets, they see the news all the time, they talk to their colleagues. Like, I don't know that you get something really strong and important from having them physically work on a different planet every month or whatever. Like, I don't know that that gives you the sort of, what's the word, like, ecumenical kind of perspective, or like this whole, like, holistic, well-rounded perspective that I think the idea was trying to get at. Like, I don't think that accomplishes that goal. And as you wrote in the show notes, and as you said, it's a bit of a pain. It's just not, it seems like extra work because you're not, in my opinion, getting a huge benefit for it.
You know, maybe it's more like anti-corruption wasn't the problem. They just wanted, sort of in the sense of, like, the Olympics, like, they just want the economic boost of, like, oh, the government is here this year. Like,
oh, yeah, like, let's build, like, the parliament chamber, and then right. They'll never get used again.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Was there anything else? I mean, we don't really see a lot in the films about how the New Republic functioned, right? And we're sort of learning more in the like the Mandalorian and that sort of thing, but I'm not sure how much degree of detail we can get into here. I mean, to be fair, Wikipedia has a lot of detail, but I don't know, is there the main thing I remember about the New Republic from the sequels is them just getting destroyed by the Star Destroyer planet, which is, I mean, it's, like, terrible, but you also, like, are not acquainted with that form of government at all at the point where you're watching that movie. So I don't know. It seems like they were pretty silly and made some bad decisions. At one point I read that, like, you had some of the old guard sort of breaking off into the resistance, and the partisan infighting and it's sort of gridlock was so bad that they couldn't get enough support to sort of defend themselves from this existential threat. I don't know. Is there any thought as to that, like, elevating maybe minority voices, like political minority voices, in issues where maybe the majority is really preoccupied with one thing, but it might be ignoring some other important I don't know, threat or issue.
Well, I mean, I think, so I don't remember the details of the book too clearly at this point, but I don't remember coming away being particularly impressed with the Republic as it was established there. And I think you're right that we were not really supposed to feel a strong connection to the Republic in the movies because it was short-lived and the focus was on the Resistance as the sort of the good guys of the trilogy. I think that they, you know, this, it's certainly an interesting debate, the populist versus the centrist. I don't know that like they both have their problems, right? I mean, the centrists, you know, a lot of them are like have some nostalgia for the Empire in terms of that kind of iron grip, which, you know, an iron grip to get rid of slavery would be a good thing, but and that's not what the only thing that an iron grip would do. And then the populists, I think, are too afraid of becoming the Empire, and not afraid enough of what happens if you are the Old Republic, where slavery is allowed to fester and you get people like Anakin Skywalker. And it's not just Anakin Skywalker. You can imagine other people who have a smaller scale impact, you know, to take some extremist action out of frustration with an ineffective government. So that could happen too. I think, you know, another, so something we haven't touched on is, who's in charge? What does the executive look like? You know, in the prequels, the chancellor was, you know, sort of selected out of the Senate. I don't think we ever got a clear answer as to whether the chancellor could be a non-senator. I think it had to be a senator. And I saw the chancellor almost as more of a really powerful sort of Speaker of the House type figure or Senate Majority Leader as opposed to a president. Of course, Palpatine made the role much more like a president, a super powerful president. But Haley, what do you think is the best way to have that executive? Should it be a totally separate branch of government? Should it be a leader within the legislative branch? How would you do that?
I am not sure. And like one of the things I do like about like the parliamentary approach is, at least in the United Kingdom, right, you have prime minister's questions and you have a lot more, I guess, opportunities to for the legislature to exercise oversight directly, like as opposed to here in the United States. We don't haul in the president to answer questions about the news of the week before the House of Representatives, which I wish we could do, or I wish we could even do an equivalent of like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is like appearing for the speaker's questions this week. Like that, like that's the kind of thing that I feel like would be healthy in some ways, but also just entertaining in other ways. But like in terms of, I'm not sure how you balance those things, because when you look at how we've separated our power here, the idea was to prevent, to sort of strike this balance that we're talking about. And there have been many, many instances of the president and the executive branch sort of abusing that power without the legislative branch really exercising oversight or even there being consequences from the legislative branch in the ways that the Constitution gives them the ability to exercise consequences. And part of that's like partisan politics. Like they don't want to, the January 6th committee is inconvenient, so I'm not going to vote for the commission that's evenly divided and would actually like not be subject to the timeline of the 2022 midterms, right? Like, I don't know. Like, we have not struck that balance in the United States, to be honest. And I'm not really sure if there's a good government to point to that has struck that balance. Do you have like a model government in mind, Eric?
No, I think you're right. This is, to a certain extent, unanswerable because, I mean, there is no perfect solution. The same is true of, we started by talking about what level of authority should the galactic government even have? How do you prevent a new empire? What are the institutional safeguards you can put in place if you have a strong central government? And it's not really clear what those are. It's not like I have a list of the exact policies that you need to put in place because, as we saw with Star Wars, sometimes the institutions aren't enough. Sometimes, sometimes it is the fault of the institutions that they become stepping stones for the Palpatine figure who is hopscotching his way to a dictatorship. But other times, even if you had the perfect institutions, you could still subvert them with just enough brute force, and you wouldn't need the institutions to get the brute force the way that Palpatine, in his case, did, especially if you have force users who are right. intent on taking that brute force. So that's a whole separate thing, is like institutions, especially in Star Wars where you have magic, are not enough to prevent the worst possible outcomes, which isn't to say they don't matter. It's just to say that you can't treat them as a true bulwark against the biggest problems, because if someone is determined to subvert the system and they have magic and they have enough people, they will do it and they can do it. So I don't know if it's better to have like a president type figure or a parliamentary type leader. And this gets to something else that I wanted to talk about, which is what kind of military the government should have. Should it be a large one that is constantly, patrolling throughout the galaxy, that is showing its presence in order to deter something like the First Order from even thinking it had a chance? Or is that kind of inevitably going to lead to abuses of power by the government? Now, we don't really have a great model for this because in the U.S., the military isn't just out there patrolling domestically. Like, we have law enforcement for that. And, whatever you think about, the role of police in America, they are at least institutionally distinct from the military. And they are, at least on paper, they have different authorities. They have different missions. And so maybe the question, Haley, is not just what kind of military should the Republic have, but should it have sort of an FBI or a national police force that, in other countries, the national police actually patrol, unlike in the U.S. where the FBI doesn't do that? Should the Republic have a forward deployed kind of presence demonstrating we are here, we're looking into things that we hear about corruption at the local level, which is something the FBI is obviously very good for? Is that is that a good thing for the Republic to do, or is that a little bit too intrusive?
I mean, so if we're drawing from the shows, right? It seems like they're a bit intrusive to that. Like you have, I don't know, the Rangers of the New Republic, like, hey buddy, you're speeding, and like the physics of them just like catching up to him in orbit. And, like,
totally separate issue, but yes,
it bothers me, and it's like, no, how do they have the resources to have these guys like notice if you're speeding in your little like ship around the orbit of your planet of Tatooine or whatever planet that was, but you don't have like the funding to do like centralized military. Like I just feel like maybe they went overboard in the opposite direction, and we don't really know, to be fair. Like, we haven't seen the Rangers of the New Republic, and we haven't really gotten a lot of details on what that was structured like, but I wouldn't rule it out as like, it seems like that was very much a thing that you had the internal people keeping order, but maybe not always focused on the right things. Like, you have this whole drug war going on the planet below them, and they're like, hey, you're going too fast in outer space. I don't know. It seems like the priorities were out of whack.
I mean, for sure, it was not well run in that form. And I actually think clearly that was a deliberate decision by the creators to kind of...
And to be fair, I love those scenes. I think they're hilarious. But... speaking institutionally, a bit silly in terms of priorities.
Yeah, and you know, someone at the space precinct clearly told them, you know, your numbers are low. You need to get your numbers up. Try arresting some Mandalorians for speeding. I clearly that was not the best use of those personnel. But if there were more of them, if they had better ships, if they had better weapons, if they were focused on the actual problems, could that potentially deter the buildup of some of the lawlessness that, you know, that is seeking that vacuum and taking advantage of the vacuum? I think there's a case to be made for that. I don't know whether you want that to be the military or a law enforcement agency. In Star Wars, we don't really see too much of a distinction there. I mean, they both exist, but we don't see the kind of legal divide that we have in the U.S. and that most other Western countries have between domestic security and sort of foreign conflict.
I think to the extent that you would have like a, like, in my opinion, and I'm sort of bringing in that concern about like abuses of power here, but if you're going to have a forward leaning sort of police force going on, I would want it not to be run by like the federal level of the New Republic, but you would want that to be your planetary government, because you want, you elect sheriffs here. Like you want the ability to like have some kind of recourse if they're going up beyond their mandate. And if it's like some huge galactic government that's in charge of that kind of thing, I think you're gonna struggle with the bureaucracy of being able to hold anyone accountable for anything. So I don't know. I think that's the kind of thing I would rather see on like the planetary level.
I don't think elected sheriffs have the best track record in the United States, at least.
But, they don't. They do not. They
but,
do not.
It, but that's which is part not
of the
to
point.
Say
that's part of the point is that our like police here do not face a lot of accountability, and but I feel like even more so if you had it on like we had federal police like roaming the streets, I feel like they would have even less accountability.
So I think the way to strike the balance is to have sector wide institutions. You know, perhaps equivalent to some kind of multi-state compact in the U.S., where it's not the galactic / you know, national government, which is too far removed and perhaps too powerful to ever be held in check by local activists or what have you, but it's also not the planetary leadership where they could use the police to, you know, facilitate corruption and have them look the other way. Like, you have that ability at some level above planetary government to say, well, we're going to investigate the planetary government. Are we more powerful than the planetary government in terms of just sort of being able to literally outmuscle them if it comes to that, but we're also not subject to them politically or culturally, so we can resist their corruption, which is kind of like, again, one of the, I would argue that throughout the checkered history of the FBI, one of the best things that it has done is be able to go in into a local situation and not be under the influence of that situation. So yeah, you don't want it to be the galactic government, but I don't think you want it to be the planetary government. I would like to see some kind of sector-wide, system-wide arrangement where they get together and they say, we're going to have people who are specifically there. They have to come from planets, obviously, but they are under the authority of a sector-wide government, And so they're a little bit more able to kind of not only see the bigger picture, but also resist whatever influence is causing the problem on the planet in the first place.
Eric, this is unrelated, but you started me thinking about it earlier where you talked about how a lot of this conversation doesn't like apply easily. Like, it's sort of messy because you have like space wizards wandering around in this situation. I was like, how would a new government go about, I was thinking, do they need to have like, I don't know, something in like public schooling or something about like a public awareness campaign about the dark side or about the Force, or like, I know the Jedi would just like randomly find the Force sensitive children and take them, but like, is there a way to sort of prioritize education of like how you sort of get into this in Avatar: The Last Airbender? What's the sequel called? Whatever
Legend
that one
of Korra.
Yes, Legend of Korra. They get into this problem because it's sort of the same thing where there's people who have powers and there's people who do not, and it's like an equality issue, and like they're trying to find ways to like make themselves as powerful and to be able to fight back or defend themselves, to the extent that like in the Star Wars canon, it's like everybody, like the Force flows through every living thing, and like should the government, I don't know, prioritize teaching people to be sensitive to the Force? It would create a lot of more like unstable or unpredictable like players in this situation, because you're actively like trying to build the number of Force sensitive people in your system or in your galaxy, but you're also sort of handing them the ability to not be like as easily oppressed by Force sensitive people. I don't know if there needs to be like a, you know, they don't all come to Coruscant to go to the Jedi school, but maybe you invest in public education about the Force and kids in school learn about it, or learn about like, here's what the dark side will tell you and here's why you should not listen to it. That sort of thing. Do you know of anything like that in Star Wars, or do you think that would be effective in any way, or is there like something I'm missing here that would be like, that's just deeply silly and like it should not happen? Like, I'm curious what you think.
I don't know of anything like that in Star Wars, but I would say that like, if you're Force sensitive, you need the Jedi to teach you how to use that power, because they're the only ones who use it and have used it and have mastered it and know how to use it. Like, regular people are not going to be able to help you go like get through the hurdles and trials and tribulations that being a Force user entails. So I don't know that we want to create some kind of other system for turning them into well-rounded Force users. I think that needs to be the domain of the Jedi. But
the Jedi like out in the systems as teachers?
Yeah. So if you're talking about more like
Qui-Gon doesn't take Anakin home with him. Like, Qui-Gon has a little schoolhouse where he teaches the children of Tatooine about Jedi. Yeah,
I mean,
teachings.
It's really a numbers question. Are there enough Force sensitive people on right. whatever planet in order to make it worth it to build another temple there? Like, in other words, I would still keep all that education within the Jedi Order. It doesn't have to happen on Coruscant. If there's a sector that, if the Jedi are analyzing their, you know, annual trend data and they discover that like a lot of kids were discovered in this particular sector last year, maybe build a temple there so that you can have more education in the place where they already are, as opposed to all bringing them to one place. But I don't know how much you get from that. I don't know what the added benefit is of just doing it in another location. If you're saying doing it outside the Jedi Order, like in a civic context, I don't think that is...
Yeah, almost like secular Force education.
I guess my question is, to what end? Is it to turn them into Jedi? Because they need Jedi Force education in order to learn how to lift rocks and deflect blaster bolts and all that stuff. If it's more of a moral, ethical dimension, again, I don't know why that can't come through the Jedi Order. And I also don't know what you get from doing it outside the Jedi. If it's a question of, like, we don't want one...
Well, I guess what you get from it, like, you don't... Not every Force-sensitive person gets discovered or ends up at the Jedi Order. And in this conversation, you know, the Jedi Order doesn't really exist yet, right? Like, or anymore, I mean.
Right.
To the extent I'm thinking about this, it's like, if there is a new government, should they invest in, not like a centralized Jedi school they all go to, but you're like kids like Broom Boy, like when he goes to school, if he gets to go to school, like part of the teachings are about like force sensitivity, it, like to the end that you're trying to, I don't know, plant seeds or like get in their minds like important lessons if they do end up being force sensitive, or like your goal on the whole, like for the government, is to like either find force sensitive people or like generally increase the number of people who understand force sensitivity and that they are force sensitive, because the plot of like Finn, for example, like he wasn't the thing he was going to tell Rey in the Rise of Skywalker, that he thinks he's force sensitive, and I don't know, making it less of like a self-discovery thing and more of like a you're in school and you practice trying like the meditations, or you try to like, I don't know, see if you are, or even if build it up like a skill, right? Like it's I know the midichlorians or whatever, but I don't know, I also sort of think that it's not just limited to like genetics or whatever. I don't know. I guess my question is, if you think a government should prioritize, I don't know, generally like the whole population, like trying to teach as many people as possible about the force and like how to use it.
I don't think so. I don't think the numbers are there. I don't think there are enough people who are force sensitive for that to be a good use of the time of a school. That being said, I do think it's a good idea, especially in this era before a large, well-established Jedi Order, for the civic education and sort of government system to be actively looking for people who are displaying those skills, and then sort of notifying, I guess it would be just Rey at this point. She's probably going to get a lot of emails. But yeah, like, they can be a, not talent scouting force, but they can be on the lookout for people who have these skills. I don't think they're necessarily, well, they're not equipped to teach them how to be Jedi, and I also don't think there are enough of them that it would be worth having, like, a force class, because I do think, as much as it's not just what is your midichlorian count, it's also not, if I try hard enough, I can use the force. Like,
yeah.
Most people are not going to be able to do it, no matter how much they learn about the basic principles of it. So,
but I guess I apologize for drawing in Harry Potter into this, but like Defense Against the Dark Arts, like if you're learning about the like the common tactics of the dark side, like you're not.
But
the
they all force, have like, magic, so they're right, all
not like, not the magic, but like I don't know, like the lies or like the like civic education in terms of how to think critically about things. Like Palpatine deceived a lot of people, right? And yes, he was using the force in most of those instances or all of them, but like maybe there's ways to increase the ability to think about, like, am I being manipulated, or
like how to resist a force mind trick.
Right. If you think really hard about nothing, like maybe they can't get into your brain.
I just don't know how much that would be separate from regular civics education and regular like moral character building through informal kind of lessons from authority figures.
Do we think that
figures.
There's like a strong education system in Star Wars?
Oh,
generally?
I mean,
it seems like it's terrible.
It definitely varies by planet, because it does seem to be totally local. I don't think there's any indication. Wow, I hope I'm not wrong about this. I don't think there's any indication that there's a galactic education department that's offering like guidance or anything like that. I think it's clearly all at the local level. So yes, I agree there needs to be better civics education. I would not say that it should be built around the idea of how to spot a force user manipulating you, because I think by its very nature, a lot of that is going to disarm your own cognitive defenses, even if you're a very smart and careful person, which a lot of the senators that Palpatine manipulated were. I think it should just be general basic civics education, and hopefully that cuts down on the number of people who are like willing to get into bed with someone like Palpatine when offers them like corrupt
counterpoint. Okay, it doesn't apply in the time of the like the Galactic Empire. Well, it does actually if you go back to the movies, but it seems like a lot of the people in Star Wars just aren't even aware of the capabilities of force users, and they're like, oh, that's a myth, or like
true.
So to the extent I'm thinking about education, like maybe the defense against it that I'm thinking of is just being aware of what they can do. like, historically, Jedi can do these things, or, like, Sith users have been able to do this. I think that that might be helpful for people, because a lot of people in Star Wars seem confused about what they're sort of up against.
I mean, sure, I think teach them history, and the history of the galaxy is these people have done these things, and don't fall for those things again. In the same way that when we teach regular old real-life history, part of the lesson is, like, don't make these mistakes. Yeah. I don't know that that has to be separated out. I mean, I guess it could be, you know, the history of the Force as a power in galactic conflict. Sure. I think that would probably already be happening in any good educational system just because of how much of an influence they've had on the history of the galaxy.
Yeah. But they don't seem to have a good educational system.
No, they definitely need better textbooks. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Is there anything else we might be missing here? Any other thoughts that have come to you during this chat?
Well, this is reminding me of our episode about the Galactic Senate and our lingering questions about why are junior representatives there? But listen to that episode if you want to hear us discuss that, folks. I think we've covered a lot of ground when it comes to what should this republic look like. Ultimately, I think, you know, if we want to sum it up the way that they did in Bloodline, I come down more on the side of the centrists. I think that the galaxy has had more easily avoidable failures from a weak central government than from a strong one. I think the possible harms of a strong central government can be avoided largely with institutional reforms. I think the weaknesses of a weak central government are really much harder to address with just sort of chipping away around the edges of the institution. So I'm on team centrist on this one. We need a strong central government that is capable of actually working with the planets to solve people's problems and also being vigilant for problems that come from the outside. But I don't know if you want to sum up your own thoughts, Haley.
I don't know. My thoughts aren't very coherent. I'm not sure if listeners could tell. They probably could, but I am not totally sold on either. And you sort of mentioned that Leia sort of like was part of both categories, where she leaned towards the populace, but also wanted to address the First Order threat with like more of a centralized military situation. So the way that it's summarized on Wikipedia, I don't know if it's mutually exclusive. Like in my mind, I think it would be great for the planets to have more autonomy, but also I'm not like, I don't think that automatically rules out that the people would be like, oh yeah, let's not have any like defensive systems built up. Like I feel like maybe in that situation you would actually overcome some of the like gridlock that was going on in the New Republic, that politicians were like, no, we shouldn't worry about this threat, because like there were skirmishes like happening out in various parts of the galaxy.
Yeah.
And the politicians were far away from that. So like maybe planets that are closer to those things that are happening would be more aware of the threat, or would be able to, I don't know, think about it in a more rational way. But I truly do not know. In a perfect world, in a perfect galaxy, you would, I think, have planetary autonomy plus like, people recognizing the need for defense systems. So maybe like your civil law situation is more dependent on more of a federalism approach. I'm not sure how to square the circle. I don't know how to strike that balance, but it seems difficult. It seems like maybe this is why the New Republic had problems.
I mean, yeah, this is as we said earlier, this is basically the challenge that confronts every government in the real world, which is how do you remain effective without creating the risk of somebody abusing your institutions for totalitarianism? How do you give people the freedom to decide a lot of things within their own local communities without creating fragmentation or inefficiency or sort of structural impotence, right, from not having some kind of strong enough, whether it's a military institution, an educational institution, whatever it is, you want things to be effective everywhere and for that effectiveness not to vary, but you also don't want to just imprint one way of doing things on a group of places where they may really want to do it differently for very good reasons. So those are fundamental questions of how to organize society, and I don't think it's going to be a surprise to our listeners that we were not able to solve those problems here on the Hoth Takes podcast, but we're going to keep trying.
It's got to be a disappointment, though. They probably came on here thinking that we were going to have the perfect government figured out.
I'm so sorry, folks. If that's what you were hoping to get from Hoth Takes, well, first of all, what? And second of all, sorry, I guess. Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Hoth Takes. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can do that by emailing us, hothtakes@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter. We are at Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seekers, and Haley is Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art. I edited this episode, and I also put together our music. Although, again, for legal purposes, we do want to note, all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.